Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is good to be with you today. November 10th, just one day away from Veterans Day. And so we have a good conversation ahead of us. We're going to talk with our friends from the Office of from International Mission and Ministry to the Armed Forces. We're going to talk with Chaplain Craig Mueller. He's the director there. And also Chaplain Mike Marino, director of Operation Barnabas, in just a little bit. Hope you can join us for these conversations. It's going to be an inspiring conversation, encouraging conversation as we talk about our servicemen and servicewomen and our veterans and the great stories that these gentlemen have to share about our veterans and what we can do to care for them. So I hope you can stick around for the conversation. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, go to our website, kfuo.org, and look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section there. You can find Concordia University, Wisconsin, and click on that. That'll take you to their page. You can find out all about the great work that they do, including supporting Faith and Family right here on Worldwide KFUO. Joining me in studio today, the Reverend Craig Mueller. He's Director of Ministry to the Armed Forces. Good morning, Chaplain Mueller.
Good morning.
It's good to have you in studio again and spend some time here on Faith and Family talking about our veterans and our servicemen and servicewomen.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me back, Andy.
Absolutely. Also joining us by phone this morning, Chaplain Mike Marino. He's the director of Operation Barnabas. Chaplain Marino, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us this morning. Good to have you on Faith and Family today.
Well, thank you. And I want to say happy Semper Fi Day.
Oh, that's right. It is, isn't it? Tell us, what is Semper Fi Day for our listeners who might not know?
Celebration of 2 days. It's a very important day in the life of Martin Luther, but also USMC birthday. So I call it Semper Fi Day. It may be just me, but I'd like to see if we can get the Semper Fi Day to take hold and see if we can start celebrating it.
All right, very good. Well, happy Semper Fi Day to you as well. Well, Chaplain Marino, tell us about Operation Barnabas. I know we've talked about it before here on Worldwide KFUO. For listeners who aren't familiar with Operation Barnabas and the work that you do, tell us about that.
Well, Operation Barnabas began as an attempt to reach the needs of a lot of folks who had been in quite a lot of turmoil. Our nation began in 2001, this long war on terror, or the long war as it's now being referred to. And what we found was that reserve components had been called up in numbers unseen since World War II. So we began to see that was really taking a toll on the fabric of our communities. We saw that most quickly with our reserve chaplains. Those are folks we had the most contact with from Synod, knowing that these pastors were leaving their congregations and being recalled to the Army, Air Force, Navy, and Coast Guard, and we began to see that their congregations really were not prepared for this. Neither were the chaplains, nor were their families. But it took quite a while to really get the full understanding of what that entailed, because quite frankly, we did not hear from these chaplains until 2004, 2005. They had been recalled to active duty, but they didn't serve for 9 months or a year, but in some cases, 2 years. And so as it began to return, we began to debrief them and say, what is it you're facing? We began to see some of these issues. And then we saw very quickly, it was like a canary in a coal mine, that it wasn't just our pastors who were not prepared, but it was all of our reservists, those folks who worked in our local communities as a barber, grocer, what have you, they were then taken from those communities and placed into the fight as well. And their families also were part of that struggle. It's really difficult to explain to folks who are not in the military, but if you're a regular civilian and you don't have a loved one in a combat theater, when you go to the movies, you go to the grocery store, you're not at war. Everything's fine. You got to pay your bills, but it's okay. But as you begin to walk along and notice other folks, these folks who are shopping close by you, going to movie theater, their loved ones who are in harm's way, their loved ones are never far from their thoughts. And it is a pressure and a burden that many simply don't understand. And so Operation Barnabas began as an approach to take care of initially our chaplains, but then to our reservists as well. And in the years that have followed, we've really opened it up to all military and their families and veterans.
Chaplain Mueller, ministry to the armed forces, I could take a guess just based on the title there, what that is. But for help us understand, what does it entail?
Sure. As Mike wonderfully put it, for the Operation Barnabas, which falls under Ministry to the Armed Forces, because we're really communicating and collaborating together on all these things. But Ministry to the Armed Forces has been a part of our Senate for a long time, supporting our men and women in the military. In fact, I just pulled out a book, They Shall Not March Alone, which compiles the numerous stories of what our chaplains did in combat and in serving our country to take care of our folks. So number one thing Ministry on Forces was to endorse chaplains, to prepare chaplains to join the military, to take care of our men and women, Missouri Senate folks that are in the military. But also now under the umbrella, it's not only take care of our active duty chaplains, but it's also our reserve chaplains, visiting their commanders, visiting them, making sure they're taken care of with their families, but also taking care of our men and women who are enlisted or officers in the line community, the fighters, if you will, the warriors, mm-hmm. to make sure that they're receiving ministry by mail or some kind of connection with their church to enable the congregations to keep in touch with them, or we can from our office, but somehow let them know that we do care about them wherever they're deployed, wherever they're stationed, that we can get them in their hands if something as simple as a Portals of Prayer mm-hmm. or a devotional book, or let them know that we're thinking and praying for them. So my big job here as Ministry of the Armed Forces Director is to coordinate all that effort, to take care of our chaplains and their families and the men and women of our armed forces. And Operation Barnabas is just a great addition to that, at the congregational grassroots level, to reaching out into their community to just take these veterans into their arms and take care of them.
Chaplain Marino, what are some of the concerns of our returning servicemen and women today? What are some of the concerns that they face?
Well, let's start with the exterior and work to the interior.
Okay.
The Department of Defense has marked three areas of concern where communities really can engage and bolster three specific areas. The first is medical care. A lot of our folks are coming back, have been wounded mm-hmm. or need continued medical care, anything from getting shot to having knee surgery, what have you. And we find that the VA, I'm sure you've heard quite a lot about that in the past few months, the VA has struggled to a large extent to meet the tsunami of veterans returning and the ones that they already have. We have estimates that in the next 5 years, 1 million more vets will be entering the VA system. And so quite frankly, they're overwhelmed. They're working to be able to deal with that, but one of the main concerns for returning vets is medical care. Another is jobs. When you come back off the battlefield and say, well, what are you good at? Well, I can drive tanks. Well, they don't have tanks at Walmart or our local communities, so how can we translate those skills into civilian jobs? And then finally, education. We have a wonderful gift and blessing in the GI Bill, and we have these vets who are coming back to school but trying to emotionally transition from being a soldier and being a combat infantry person to now sitting in a school and in a college. And that transition can be rather difficult as well. And so our communities and our churches have a unique opportunity to be a voice for those returning veterans. And having said that, on the exterior side, the interior, these families who have seen repeated deployments, some 1, 2, 3, 6, 7 deployments, takes its toll on a family. So the relationship between husband and wife certainly is something that we seek to bolster and strengthen and honor, as well as the unseen wounds of war with PTSD and other issues. So there's quite a large map from which to choose. But one thing we want to be careful of, these are some very broad-ranging issues. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to pigeonhole veterans and say, oh, you're a veteran, therefore you have to go to the VA, or you have PTSD. That's not the case. These are large issues, but the only way we get to see what one person's issue is to talk to them, to visit with them, to pray with them, and to listen to their story.
Speaking of stories, what are some of the stories of that you can share with us? Some of the stories of veterans that you would like to share with us today?
Well, one that comes to mind, actually, it's not a veteran story. It's a Gold Star story. And Gold Star, folks may not know, it's something that they need to know, and it's something that's too bad to know about. Gold Star families are those families who have lost a loved one in the fight. And as we celebrate Veterans Day, I think each veteran listening will also speak with me, and that we honor those who did not come back. But having said that, there was a soldier from Oklahoma who was killed, and his father really took the death very hard. And there was a fellow, Colonel Dave Sutherland, who worked in a unit that reached out to families. And he heard about this man, and the man really had just kind of retreated to his basement and really didn't come out for, you know, almost a month. You know, just stayed in the house, wouldn't work, etc. And finally, he Dave Sutherland got to get in there and visit and just sat and listened and cried with this man. But he had not been able to take advantage of a lot of the supports that are there for our Gold Star families. And we really want to be able to share with everyone that even if you're a veteran, you're not, if you've never served, what you can do is be a conduit. When you see a need, when you see someone who is in need, if you don't have the answers yourself, that's okay. Mm-hmm. But help reach out to those who might be able to help. There are many folks who are suffering in silence, and that's something we wish to avoid and to be able to address. So one of the first things is to remember those who have fallen, but then also for those who are struggling to be able to reach out, and that's a very important lesson.
You mentioned suffering in silence. There, I'm sure that when a soldier returns home, that there are some things that they struggle with that we don't hear or see. What are some of those issues that are hidden or silent that we may not see that a returning soldier might struggle with?
Well, I think some are unconscious and some are conscious. Mm-hmm. A humorous one, I left active duty in 2007. Craig just left in August, so he may be facing some of these things. But it was funny, after about a week or two of being home and being out of the Navy, whenever I'd walk out the door, I would reach and touch my head. Why in the world would I reach and touch my head? Well, I wanted to make sure I had my cover on. When you're in the military, you have to have your cover on. But it was just kind of a thing that, something that had been ingrained in me, that it was no longer needed. And so it took a little while to get that taken care of. The military does give us a great number of benefits, and it changes us in some respects. For example, when you talk to a Marine, chances are it's still yes or no, sir, but be very polite. That's how they're taught to do that. Those are some unconscious things. But then as we talk about other issues, there are some things that we do want to be mindful of for folks who have been in combat. For example, if a fellow has just come back from Afghanistan, it's difficult for him to be in a large room, say. When you're in Afghanistan, you're with your buddies, and you go into a room. The first thing you do is look for the exit in case something bad happens. You have to know how to get out of there. Also, you need to know where everybody's at. So the things that keep you alive over there can get in the way over here. Another example is if one of your buddies is wounded or hurt, and there's an emotional attachment to your buddy. You love them, you care for them, you want them to be okay. But if you're in a combat situation, you don't have the luxury to experience those feelings of sadness or anger or what have you. You have to shove them in a bag and continue with the mission. You can't really experience those emotions. Mm. And so emotion suppression is something that occurs in a great deal. And when you come back home, you've learned to suppress emotion, and it's difficult to reopen that bag. Especially if there's a lot of bad stuff in it. It's kind of dangerous and scary. Much easier to keep emotions suppressed. But that does cause problem with your kids and your wife when they love you and want to express emotion to you, and you seem almost emotionless. So that's another issue that it takes a little while to kind of get used to and then be able to transition back home fully.
Craig, Chaplain Marino mentioned some of the kind of the funny habits, the humorous habits that seem humorous now. It was just habits, things that he encountered when he came back to civilian life. How about for you? Is there anything that you find yourself doing just out of habit?
Well, absolutely. I still do it. Did it today. You know, I got to go make a head call. Did you shut the hatch? Bulkhead, all the Navy terminology that you just becomes a part of who you are, or slipping into acronyms, which is dangerous, talking to civilians that they don't have a clue what you're talking about. So it's a conscious effort for sure to realize where you are in your environment and adjusting. And to piggyback on Mike says, yeah, those are a lot of fun things that we kind of joke about, and even inner services will joke. The vets will have a good time kidding each other, service, you know, Air Force or Army or Navy or Marine Corps and so forth. But to kind of piggyback on Mike's other point, what are some of the things that I noticed too, for not so much for me, and for me it was more of the loud noises are still a little bit scary when you hear that, when you don't know where it came from. But a lot of guys I talk to, you know, just driving down the road, you see some of those, we call them alligators, I get, right? The blown tires. Mm-hmm. Those could all be IEDs when you're driving in Iraq. So any debris on the side of the road and all that kind of stuff, their heightened awareness is there. And I think that's for, you know, the family gets frustrating sometimes. But eventually, you know, it just, as Mike said, you can't assume they all have PTSD. They may have PTS, just some stress that they're dealing with, and they'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. And they're still it's very just, functional.
Right.
Yeah.
Just love them because God isn't finished with them yet. Just be patient.
Yeah.
And be for them. So yeah, there's a lot of fun things that we still remember, and we'll break that slowly, but some we don't want to.
Sure. I know, I recall one soldier we talked with who had returned, still every time he goes out to the car, whether it's with the family or by himself, he still checks, you know, he checks around the car, make sure that everything's safe before they get in the car and take off, just out of habit, routine.
Absolutely. Yep.
Just making sure that everything's safe and secure before the whole family loads up in the car. Well, certainly some of them are some of those habits that that routine, as you said, can provide some comic relief for us and some laughter. But certainly some of it is very difficult and challenging. And I appreciate that both of you gentlemen have helped us understand that we can't lump any one person, any one soldier or veteran into a specific category and just assume that everybody who returns from combat has PTSD. We shouldn't certainly assume that. But are there things that we want to be sensitive to? Are there matters that we want to be sensitive to when a serviceman or woman is returning home, especially from combat? Are there things that we want to be sensitive to, Chaplain Marino?
Well, it's kind of difficult, you know, when you talk about be sensitive to. That's a good question. And were you a therapist or a psychologist, you might want to, you know, look at certain things. But for the layperson, for, you know, mom or dad or whoever, I think the simplest thing is to say, hey, thank you for your service.
Mm-hmm.
And then to allow them to tell their story at their time. And it really, you know, there's so much that the experiences are so different. But let's say for a fellow who has been in combat and seen some difficult things and comes back home and there's this big get-together. And so everyone's saying, hey, how was it? How was it? And he talks to grandma. And he's seen all kinds of things, but this is grandma. And there's certain things he can tell grandma, certain things he can't. So what he or she will do is catalog all of the experiences that they have almost in a microsecond. But then they'll choose something that's safe, something that's okay to tell. And it's possible that, you know, in the middle of something, they had a chance to play a volleyball game, you know, at a little place where they were able to be safe. So they'll say, well, I played volleyball. Well, you didn't play volleyball the whole time you were there, but that's something safe that you can say. Because quite frankly, some of the things and actions that we went over there and we had to do, we wanted to do them over there and away from our family. Those experiences in many of our minds taint our family. We don't want to tell them all the things that we did, because were we to share that experience, in some of our minds we feel that would taint, that would desecrate the things that we love the most, our families. So oftentimes we're hesitant to share those experiences. Although having said that, again, for family get-togethers, there's usually a large get-together, and so everybody's there, and everybody's on edge to make sure that you don't say the wrong thing or ask the wrong question.
Mm-hmm.
And then a 10-year-old kid comes up and say, hey, did you kill somebody? And nobody's like, ah, you can't ask that, but usually the veteran will handle it, you know, in a very appropriate way, and that's kind of what people want to know. But again, the story belongs to the soldier or the Marine or the airman or the sailor, and they're the ones that decide how to tell it and what to share.
As Craig, you were nodding your head as you heard Chaplain Marino sharing this, that right, every family there's going to be that child or that family member with no filter, and just comes right out and asks the question that everybody else is wanting to ask, but you know, that everybody else cringes then when they ask it, but they're waiting to hear the answer.
Right. Yep.
It's that awkward moment at the, you know, family get together, Thanksgiving or Christmas, and times like that, or other family, you know, big family get togethers. Are family things like, you know, with the holidays coming up, are things like that challenging for can they be difficult? You know, a big family get together, can that be difficult for someone returning, especially from combat? Craig, you want to?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think, you know, it depends on where they're at. But if this is their first Thanksgiving or Christmas since they've been deployed for a year, it's that new. You know, they've missed it for a couple times, or it could just be awkward again trying to figure it out. And again, what family members are there. It's sort of like what Mike just shared wonderfully about how everybody's different. You know, they're just walking on eggshells because they don't want to say the wrong thing, and
sure,
just letting them know that it's just your family, your loved ones. You know, these are the people that they're still yours. You know, just treat them like you would any other time, but just be patient with them as they walk through that. But I think you know, more going back to what Mike said too, for those who have lost someone, obviously you have that other factor there that someone's not at the table that was before because they were lost in combat. I mean, it's probably no different than anybody who lost a loved one through other thing, whether it's disease or car accident or other horrible situation. But for you know, a combat veteran to have that empty table or chair at the table, you know, those are things that they just have to work through. And I guess that circles back to us, you know, as the Operation Barnabas and being our congregations there, to reaching out to, if those are people in our congregation, just to not lose the sight that we bring something that a lot of these veteran programs don't bring, and that's the gospel of Jesus Christ to them in these dark and dying times and tough times, because there's a lot of helping agencies out there, but they'll shy away from the real answer that we can bring. And that's why it's so critical for us to be in that engagement with our veterans and their families, to let them know that we're there to support them, but we also have, you know, the gospel there, and that Jesus loves them all the way through.
Chaplain Marino, when a family member, when a soldier returns home, and the holidays are approaching, and they may be reluctant to come to the family gathering, as a family member, in talking with them and trying to find out if they're going to come, and you kind of get the sense that they're not going to attend, you know, Thanksgiving or Christmas, the family get together. It's just too much for them at that point in time. How do you go about that conversation? You don't want to be pushy. How do you gauge, you know, when to encourage more and when to just let them have their space?
Well, let me back up to a thought. Like when you're over there, you idolize. You think, boy, I just can't wait to have mom's chocolate pudding or turkey or whatever. So you're thinking and you're wanting to be there, and it's such a wonderful thing. And so finally, the opportunity is there, and it's right so close. But then for some folks, it's almost an overwhelming from places they don't even know where it comes from. It may be grieving the loss of a buddy. It may be grieving what we call a moral injury, where the soldier, Marine, airman, or sailor has been forced to choose the least worst of a series of actions, where they had to take a life or what have you. And for some folks, they feel that taints them, that they're dishonorable, that they're not worthy. And when you go to a dinner and everyone acknowledges you and feats you, meaning that they raise you up and say what a great guy you are, when you're feeling that's the very last thing you are, that's a difficult time. And again, most veterans are able to navigate that, but there are struggles. For me, and I invite Craig's take on this as well, because I think we all have different approaches. For me, when I talk to a veteran, I'm really rather blunt. I can dance around an issue, but that often leads to confusion. To say, hey, we'd love to have you. Do you feel comfortable coming? No, I don't feel comfortable coming. Oh, I understand. I mean, I get that. Would there be some things that we could do that would make it more comfortable? Instead of spending the 6 hours or 4 hours, what? Happy you just came for the hour for dinner. Oh, okay. Well, maybe that's good. How about if you came near the end? Or what can we do to make it more manageable for you? That might be an approach to take. But for me, dancing around or trying to figure out the right way to ask it often leads to confusion. So I'm rather more blunt in saying, how do you feel and what can we do to help you?
I would agree with Mike there. I think that's critical because you don't want to go the other way. And then if they say, no, I don't feel like going, just leave it at that, because they may need that push and that affirmation that it's okay. We understand. Maybe like Mike said, an hour before just for dinner, you can head home. Whatever you need to do, you don't have to play part of all the activities that we got going, whatever the family tradition is. But I think my experience is too, is you just got to talk to them bluntly and see what's going on and let them know that you're there for them, whatever they choose to do.
Absolutely. Well, we are talking today with Chaplain Mike Moreno, Director of Operation Barnabas, and Chaplain Craig Mueller, Director of Ministry to the Armed Forces for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, gentlemen, you want to take some calls? We'll open up the listener lines and we'll take some calls. 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us, family@kfuo.org. That's family@kfuo.org or 1-800-730-2727. Stick around for more Faith and Family right after this break on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
If you doubt prayer works, listen to this. Jane was injured in an accident and became addicted to the pain meds. Then she became pregnant, fearful of living with the guilt that the drugs affected her baby, and she already had two kids, Jane decided to abort. Her mom and stepfather tried to talk her out of it to no avail. When Jane got to the abortion mill and talked with the abortionist, the unusual happened. He said, "I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm not doing this procedure for you." Afterward, Jane called her mom to relay what happened. Her stepdad broke down in tears, saying, "For 3 hours, I've been laying on the floor crying and asking God to make the abortionist refuse to do the abortion." Prayer works. The baby was born healthy.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, Craig D'Onofrio here. I want to invite you to join me Monday through Friday at 5 p.m. for Reformation Rush Hour. We'll have some of today's most interesting and intelligent people on the show. We'll talk about news that affects your faith. We'll look at the world around you and talk about how it interacts with Christianity, and we'll have a good time doing it all. This is the fastest hour in radio as you drive home, Monday through Friday, 5 p.m., right after Issues Etc. on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Do you have a reason to reach out to us at Worldwide KFUO? Is there a piece of communication you'd like for us to receive? It's not hard to reach us. Our street address is KFUO, 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. If you missed it, the street address is found at the bottom of our homepage online, kfuoam.org. Every day we bring you the gospel of Jesus Christ in word and song. Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Finding just the right partner is a blessing when it comes to achieving God's plans. Hi, I'm Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Before taking this position, I worked with LCEF in my home congregation. It was a joy to find a true Lutheran partner that understood our unique needs as we built a school and welcomed new families into our church and community. I hope you experience that joy too. Visit lcef.org to find out how your ministry can become empowered in its kingdom work.
Have you ever missed a live broadcast of one of your favorite KFUO programs? Well, let me propose a convenient solution for you. Visit the KFUO website, kfuo.org, and download your favorite program by way of podcast to your iPhone or other smart device. It's easy, it's simple, it's convenient, and you'll never miss another program. KFUO, the official voice of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is the messenger of good news by way of radio, web, and podcast.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is a good day here on Faith and Family at Worldwide KFUO, celebrating 90 years of proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ, and glad to be a part of that here with Faith and Family as we talk about where family life and faith all intersect and what God has to say about our vocations in family. And today we are talking about our veterans and Operation Barnabas. We're talking with Chaplain Mike Marino, Director of Operation Barnabas, and Chaplain Craig Mueller, Director of Ministry to the Armed Forces. If you have questions for our guest today, questions or comments, you can give us a call or an email, 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us, family@kfuo.org, as we're talking with our guest today on veterans and Operation Barnabas. Now, Chaplain Marino, before we went to the break, we were talking about caring for that returning soldier, and especially with the holidays and some of the challenges, and when to press and when not to press, how to approach that. Are you coming to Thanksgiving dinner? Question, and you both gave us some great advice that don't beat around the bush. Don't try to avoid having the conversation, but to be honest about it, to be sincere and forthright in the information. You know, are you coming to Thanksgiving dinner? And if they say no, what can we do to make that manageable for you, make it more comfortable for you? Can you come for an hour? Can you come just for dinner? Maybe at the end, all those things. And listen is what I hear you saying.
Yeah, listen, and it may even be like, hey, we can't do dinner. Okay, well, we're going to bring you something over. We'll just drop it off, me and the kids. We'll say hello for 5 minutes and be on our way. So that's pretty important as well. But as I've been thinking about our conversation, we're certainly focusing on our veterans, but we also want to remember our families. And for example, the spouse of a veteran may be having some difficulty. She's also kind of between the devil and the deep blue sea. She's very loyal, or he's very loyal to the spouse. But they're not quite sure what to do. So also in these days of holiday, there's, I think, added pressure upon them as well of trying to keep things together and kind of return to normalcy when you feel anything but normal. So when we talk about our veterans, let's recall also their families, the spouses, who often are struggling so hard to love and care and be there for those veterans, but there may be some difficulty. So we want to recall them as well.
Certainly, and that's some of the silent stuff that we were talking about earlier. That someone might be struggling is that family that's still at home, that's left here at home when someone is deployed. the challenges that they may face that may go, the needs that they have that may go unmet. And what are the ways that some of those, you know, how can we care for them? What are the needs that often come up when someone is deployed and leaves family behind?
Well, they've just lost, you know, a very important team member in their team, and there's an added burden upon the remaining spouse. So it may be, some very practical things. I understand our neighbors to the north in Minnesota have an inch or a foot of snow. Well, if your loved one usually does the snow removal and they're not there, maybe you could volunteer to help with that, help with getting kids from activities here or there, whatever. But again, it goes back to asking that individual, hey, what can I do for you? But when you have that conversation, there's a right way and a wrong way. The wrong way, hey, if I can do something for you, let me know, and smile and leave it there. Most families will say, oh, thanks very much, but really won't go past that. That seems to be the polite offer, but no follow-up. Or if you say, hey, I can help take your kids to school, or I can help get them from piano lessons or what have you, or, you know, when I do my snow removal, you know, on my driveway, I'd be happy to do yours too. Is that okay? And really offer it and say, this is what I'm going to do, and then allow them to decline it. But you have specific actions, specific things that you're willing to do to be of service to them as they are missing a team member from their family.
Absolutely. I was just thinking of, you know, the mom that's left at home with, a child or multiple children. And as you were describing the snow situation, if they're really little children and she doesn't want to get out in the cold weather to shovel the snow with, you know, usually she'd have to take the children with her if they're really little. If she's got toddlers, can't leave them inside by themselves while she's out shoveling the driveway. Well, you don't want to necessarily take, you know, all these things that as a parent now myself, these things that start to come to mind that I think about how difficult it would be trying to go that alone as a single parent. And that's really what happens for spouses of the deployed. They kind of become single parents in a way.
And as we talk about our veterans, really, you know, every veteran has a family, and we want to recognize our veterans and their families. And, you know, we've just talked in the past 30 seconds, and we see like a window snapshot of what it's like to be a spouse. But their lives are also lives of service. Their families sacrifice so that our families remain safe. And again, I take my hat off to all of the military families and spouses who allow us in the military to do what we do.
Absolutely. When it comes to being, let's talk about the deployed. We've talked about their families here stateside. Let's talk about the deployed. How important, and this is more a Ministry of the Armed Forces question probably, Chaplain Mueller, how important is it that we have chaplains to bring the word and sacrament ministry to those who are serving overseas? How important is it, and how much of a difference does it make it then for them when they return home that they had a chaplain, they had word and sacrament ministry while they were serving?
Absolutely. It's obviously very critical. And, you know, we do our best to, get as many chaplains as we can. You know, we got 70 on active duty now, give or take. Some retire and some are coming in. So it's not a whole lot. So there's going to be a lot of places that our men and women, Missouri Synod folks that are deployed will not have access to a Missouri Synod chaplain. So it's very critical that the Missouri Synod chaplain, wherever they are, is to mm-hmm. do a big net to let them know that they're around, and especially during these holiday seasons or holy days or special occasions, to do what we can to make sure that they're being provided the Word Sacrament Ministry, which is their number one mission of why we send chaplains into the armed forces, because they are missionaries and they're called to do that.
And we have them in all kinds of unique places, such as we just heard from Chaplain Sutton not too long ago, Diego Garcia.
Yep.
Didn't even know about it, that it existed, this little strip of island out in the British Indian Ocean. Thanks be to God that we have a chaplain there to serve those men and women to bring that good news of Jesus to them.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're not all Hawaii or San Diego or Florida, you know, that we get those little other garden spots around the world.
So it's important for us to have chaplains to bring this good news of Jesus to them, to have word and sacrament ministry for them wherever they're serving. And as you said, we can't, we don't have chaplains everywhere. And so some certainly go without that direct support of a chaplain. But for those who do receive it, do you see, can you tell that there's a difference for them when they come back home? Does it help in any way if they've had a chaplain when they were serving? Does it help them make any kind of transition when they come back home?
Well, I don't know if I have the empirical data to, if everybody's followed up on, you know, because it's really it's such a fast-moving thing, and you do lose touch.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a lot of follow-up to see, you know, if there's any study that shows that, hey, that did help. But I would like to think it does, and why they're there. I think, you know, having that community of faith there mm-hmm. in the sands of Iraq, knowing that your family's also worshiping wherever they are, you know, that community of faith that you have. So I would think it would be, but I don't know if it would be said that it's better or worse.
Sure.
You know, but the bottom line is it does give them what they need, you know, there, the word and sacrament, and it gives them, it's often leads to, obviously, pastoral care, mm-hmm. because you are their pastor out there, because they're far away from their shepherd here in the States, whatever congregation they belong to. So there's opportunity for counseling and encouragement and working on whatever issues they had. Because a lot of times, sometimes our deployed folks will think, well, if I had a little problem in my marriage, or when I get back, it'll all be good, you know, after 7 months. But no, that's not true. It's not going to be just go away because you went away for a while. So there's all kinds of issues and work on it. But I think that that's why it's a mission field. We're mm-hmm. we're out there to try to get wherever they are and to bring the gospel to our men and women, but also those who aren't mm-hmm. a member of our congregation but are looking for hope.
Chaplain Marino, Chaplain Mueller mentioned, you know, the gospel in the midst of the sands of Iraq, and I understand you have a story about that.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I just also happen to have a book. The fellow that I worked with is—he's now a like Lieutenant Colonel Folsom. When we were in Kuwait preparing to go into Iraq, there were a lot of our evangelical brothers who had mass baptisms. You walk in the door, you get baptized. Well, praise be to God. However, I preferred to have instruction to say exactly what is baptism. What does God give to you in this means of grace, and how are you brought into the family of God and baptized into Christ, into His death? And so we had planned to have a class with about 10 people. And before that class began, it was Tuesday or Wednesday, at 3 o'clock that morning, we got orders to move out. So we didn't have class. We were on the road into Iraq on the late part of March. And one of my Marines, a fellow Lance Corporal Suarez del Solar, was killed. We lost one man. That's one too many. But in terms of losses, we were fortunate not to have so many losses. But I did his funeral. And as we began to finish up after the funeral, after the memorial service, Seth Folsom was his commanding officer, and I could tell that it had taken quite a toll on him to be a commander and to lose your first Marine. Seth and I had numerous conversations before, and he was going to be in my class. And we had conversations, I would say catechetical conversations, meaning that I would tell him what baptism was, but we didn't have an official chance to be able to finally, you know, go through the class. But I talked to him shortly after the memorial service, and again, we had 5-10 minutes before he had to move out again. And I just looked and said, Seth, do you want to be baptized? And he looked at me and said, yeah, I would. And as a matter of fact, I have his words here, and I just want to see if I can pull those here right quickly. He says... I'll read just a very quick bit. I asked if he would like a baptism. What? Here? I asked, taken aback. Now? Sure. Do you have any water? Yeah. He asked me down a bottle of water. I handed it to Marino. Davis and Gergana sat perched atop the turret and looked down at us, wondering what was going on. Go ahead and take a knee, he told me. I knelt at his feet, my head bowed, and my eyes closed. I recited a series of passages from the rite of baptism, many of which I had to repeat after him. Then he poured water from the bottle into his hands and doused my head with it. As the water ran through my hair and down my face in tiny rivulets, my shoulders slackened. the great weight that had bore down upon me began to lessen. I felt rejuvenated. When the ceremony was complete, I stood. Thank you for doing that, Chaplain. Those were his words, and I didn't know what it was until I read his book, but we had several good conversations after that. But battlefield baptisms, you know, are somewhat rare, but I had the privilege to be able to do that with Seth, and that is probably one of the highlights of my ministry, to be able to be in Iraq in that very difficult and terrible place, but God allowing me to be used in that way to bring this peace to a man who sorely needed it.
Hmm. Chaplain Mueller, as you hear that story of the bringing the good news right there in a very difficult place, in a battlefield. What does that make you think about the importance in the work of ministry to the armed forces?
Well, I think that just—it's just a beautiful story, and that's the gospel at work.
Yeah.
And thank Mike for being there at that time for that opportunity that God used him in that situation. And I think a lot of our chaplains, it's hard to get it out of them. They're very private too, but
sure.
to share their stories like that, because we know that that kind of ministry is happening, and the opportunity that God's opening doors in these difficult places, difficult situations, and so we thank God for Mike being there and all of our chaplains being there with them side by side.
Mm, absolutely.
And I share that story with you, but one thing you got to know is, although that's one story from Iraq, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of stories of our chaplains reaching out to our folks in the battlefield, in garrison, meaning back home, with their families, with their children. Just the work that our pastors do is immeasurable, and we're grateful to God for all of their work.
Chaplain Mueller, just any idea where all, just off the top of your head, where we have chaplains? We had a caller with a question, any chaplains in Africa? Do you know off the top of your head where some of our chaplains are serving?
I don't know, Mike, if we could jump in, if he's had knows of any of the reserve chaplains. That I did get word that we have one that's probably in the hopper to go with his unit. Now, we do have some that have their units there, but they didn't go because it wasn't the whole unit.
Mm-hmm.
So they have contact with folks that are going for this special mission that's going on down there. But otherwise, it's we're pretty well, as you said, Diego Garcia, we're pretty well spread as much as you can be, I think, for a denomination that we can. And that's what's really unique, too, that with only 70, there is a unique ministry requirement, if you will, that we have of being a sacramental church of the Lord's Supper, that we've got to get our Missouri Synod folks to a place where they could receive the word and sacrament. So I don't know specifically. I'll have to do some research. I know there's still
I'm sure that's hard to keep track of with everybody moving all the time. It's probably hard to maintain.
It is, especially now that I'm on this side of the fence. When I was in, it was a little bit easier. I had access to that stuff. And I understand, too, because there are classified information or troop movements and stuff that they got to be careful about. So we do the best we can to know where they are and if we can support them. And so it really relies on our communication, again, with our chaplains back and forth internally and externally with them. But we want them to know, too, that when they go to these missions, they're not going alone. If there's anything we can do for them, we're here to support him.
I will jump in. Dave Slusner, pastor from Cary, South Carolina, or North Carolina, is currently in Djibouti, which is the Horn of Africa. And that is kind of a hot spot for a lot of military activity for what we call AFRICOM, the command in the U.S. that works in that part of the world. And we have had other chaplains head over there. So at this point, at least wait for today, Dave is over there, but his deployment is coming to an end. I don't know the exact date, but we have folks over there, and as Craig mentioned, it looks like we have folks getting ready to go as well.
Well, I'd like to, we've got about 5 minutes left. I want to make sure that we share with our listeners how they can be welcoming, what they can do, especially in terms of Operation Barnabas, so that our troops know when they come home what's here for them. What can we do as lay people? What can we do as congregations and as pastors to be welcoming and to serve our military as they return home?
Well, the first thing, I'll go from the least expensive to that. Maybe that might take a few shekels. But the first and foremost thing you can do is pray. We say that so often, but as I read in John Kleinig's book, Grace Upon Grace, one of the seventh graders said, you know, I think the very best thing we can do for someone and everything else is to pray and bring their needs to God. So we do covet and request the prayers for all of our veterans. Second is, if there's something that you, your congregation would like to do, is to hold what we call a Ministry of the Armed Forces Sunday. Become aware of what your church, your Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is doing. We've got some great opportunities, some great stories, and we're able to do this work because of the support we receive from our members. So we're so very grateful that you have been so generous to allow us to provide chaplains to the Department of Defense to be able to start Operation Barnabas. All you need to do is call the Synod and talk to our administrative assistant, Nancy, and say, I want to hold the Ministry of Armed Forces Sunday. And we'll send you materials to be able to share that story. And then as you find out what we're doing, to say, hey, I'd like to support XYZ. You may be drawn to having a Barnabas group in your church where you can work in a very strong way in your community to welcome vets in terms of different events. You may be drawn to want to send care packages to our chaplains. A lot of times in the Department of Defense, the budget that we have to buy religious supplies may be minimized. We may not have the ability to buy as many things as we want. And we just had Chaplain Jim Buckman, who is a reservist, go to Cotter. And he requested and put the word out for catechisms. And goodness, our people responded so generously. He received over $50,000 worth of catechisms and hymnals that flooded that entire area, but also allowed him to teach the catechism both to his airmen, he was and soldiers, but then also he was able to get a Skype program going where the soldier could be in a Bible study on one side of the world and Skype with his family who were studying the same scriptures and catechism together. What a wonderful opportunity.
That's neat.
So we invite you to join the work that we do at whatever level you feel comfortable. If you would certainly like to support us with your prayers or with your donations, we're so grateful for that. If you want to get something going on in your congregation and see how you can become more active in your community, give us a call. We'll be more than happy to visit with you by phone. Perhaps come to visit. We'd love to do that and see how we can be able to bring the gospel to these veterans who have given so, so very much.
It's I had the privilege of getting to hang out with you gentlemen a little bit this past weekend at the Rural and Small Town Mission Conference and see all the folks that you got to meet with there as well. And it is I think it is valuable to have that face-to-face time to get to talk with folks from congregations. That's why a conference such as the RSTM conference was a valuable experience, to have that face-to-face time and talk about what each congregation is different. Not every congregation is gifted in the same way when it comes to the resources and ways that they can care for our returning soldiers. But that's where you all come in. You can help us as congregations look at how we can meet the needs and be welcoming to those who are returning from overseas. Well, we have just about a minute left. How can we find out more about Operation Barnabas? And we'll also talk about Ministry at Armed Forces. Chaplain Marino, how can we find out more about Operation Barnabas?
Well, we're retooling our webpage, but you can always go to lcms.org/Operation Barnabas,
mm-hmm.
and you can find out what we're doing on that webpage. You can also email me at chapmarino@gmail.com, and I'm sure we can or also call the office of the Lutheran Missouri Synod, 800-248-1930, and be asked to be connected to Craig and the folks at the Ministry of Armed Forces, and we'll be happy to work with you.
And Chaplain Mueller, we can find out about Ministry Armed Forces, lcms.org/armed forces. Is that correct?
That's correct. Lots if everything of... else is the same, or another email is lcmschaps@lcms.org, and that will get to all of us for a quick email. That's lcmschaps.
Very good. lcmschaps@lcms.org. Well, gentlemen, I really appreciate the time that you've shared with us today and the encouragement and a blessed Veterans Day for both of you and all those you serve. Thank you so much for being my guest today. Chaplain Mike Marino, Director of Operation Barnabas, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
And Chaplain Craig Mueller, Director of Ministry to the Armed Forces, thanks for being our guest today on Faith and Family.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, right here on listener-supported worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.
Finding just the right partner is a blessing when it comes to achieving God's plans. Hi, I'm Rich Robertson, President and CEO of the Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Before taking this position, I worked with LCEF in my home congregation. It was a joy to find a true Lutheran partner that understood our unique needs as we built a school and welcomed new families into our church and community. I hope you experience that joy too. Visit LCEF.org to find out how your ministry can become empowered in its kingdom work.
Cross Defense, the apologetic show for inquiring minds of all ages. Cross Defense airs Mondays from 2 to 3 p.m. on air, online, on demand, right here on Worldwide KFUO.